WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Monday morning. It is time to be joined, as we are each week at this time, by New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. How was your weekend?
It was great. I actually just got back from Virginia. My niece just graduated from high school, so feeling old, I guess.
So you were on vacation then this last week?
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way.
Okay, because I know you were not at some meetings.
Yes, all last week. I missed their budget hearing. Well, I wasn't there physically, but I watched, now that we obviously have our meetings live streamed, which I hope everyone takes up on that option. So actually on the way to Virginia, I was watching the budget hearing on the live stream and then getting to watch the ordinance committee meeting as well. Those were the two meetings last week, which I'm sure we could discuss because not a lot happened, but I think a lot to discuss about what did not happen, I would say, in the ordinance committee meeting. And then obviously the budget hearing, which will continue this week, two additional budget hearings this week. But yeah, so yeah, that's why I wasn't here last week. A lot of family time, which to me, I'm like, the reason why I said, yeah, I guess you can count it as a vacation is family time can be sometimes stressful and not as relaxing as...
It can be worse than work sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
And well, because I was asked if I knew where you were, if you had mentioned being on vacation, I was like, I don't remember. You probably did say it, and I just don't remember because I have a terrible memory.
No, I don't think I had mentioned it, especially because I was still trying to figure out my travel plans. Because initially, you know... trying to figure out the budget hearings as well. And my niece Ayla, she's a student athlete. And so last minute they had discovered that they were going to be playing a soccer game the morning of her graduation, which was that Wednesday. So initially I was going to be here for the budget hearing and then just drive the morning of the graduation and get there in time. It's about an 8-hour drive. Mm-hmm. But then I wanted to be there for the game, mainly because I hardly ever get to see any of her soccer games.
You're going to be there anyway, yeah.
And so besides myself, she's the only other Burgo that ends up in the paper a lot for her scoring ability. In that day in particular, she had scored two of the goals for the winning. They won that game, so they'll go on to the finals, which is kind of odd to me, mainly because she graduated, and so it's weird. Strange that she's still going to be playing for the school.
Yeah, that does happen with the seniors. Yeah, where they're still, if they go deep into the postseason, yeah, they'll still be, even though they don't have to go to school anymore. And it's always a rule that if you're not in school that day, you can't play.
Yeah,
but they can't really hold you to that when you don't need to be in school anymore.
Yeah, and obviously she's responsible and she is like very dedicated, mainly because she's going to go to Mount St. Mary's to play for their women's soccer team, and so. Obviously, soccer is very, very important to her, so I imagine she'll still continue. Like even while we were there after graduation, she was still going to the practice. They had soccer practice even afterwards, so she was still going to those and preparing for the games that they were going to be heading to.
So with the budget hearings, how are those going? I know it's early still, but...
Yeah, I think, you know, based on the ones that we've had so far, obviously they can be... long. And I say that mainly for the department heads, really, too. Certain department heads, you come through, we, you know, some departments are cut and dry, and others we have a few more questions for. I will say the budget has had somewhat of a transformation this year. The contractual services line, for example, has a bit more of a breakdown of contracts and specifics within it of this is what the actual amounts for, which I actually prefer, mainly because that was one of the big questions every year when we department head comes before us, is, okay, your contractual service line increased. What is this amount actually for? Mm-hmm. And I think it helps us too, because when we're, you know, looking at potential cuts somewhere, it helps us realize, okay, if we cut this certain amount from this particular account, how will they be able to, you know, fund this gap, especially if they're looking at this particular contract, which, yeah, you're looking at this whole number here, but then it's made up of these smaller contracts. So how important is this contract? What is this contract needed for? And I think one of the important questions, some of my colleagues, you know, I think about Councillor Morad, for example, that's been brought up year after year about, you know, things like printers or other products that we use collectively. What are ways that we can try to monopolize on, you know, products that we use as a whole? How are we getting the best bang for our buck? Or even, I know she brought up the question about cell phone usage. You know, each department head or, you know, different departments, they need to have a cell phone. You know, they have to be on the go. You can't be chained to a desk phone. So we understand that. But why is it, for example, we're looking at the budget and certain departments, their cell phone cost is higher than a different department? Shouldn't it just be, you know, we have 100 cell phones, divide, you know, by right. 100, it's cost this much for a cell phone. Why is it that this department head's paying, you know, just for a random number, you know, $30 for their phone, this one's $100 or whatever the case may be? So looking at that to see, are we getting a good rate? How is this contract being made up with? I think it's T-Mobile, or if I remember correctly from CFO Ekstrom was explaining the contract that we have. But that's essentially what this time frame is about, going through with a fine-tooth comb all the different contracts we have, all the different agreements that we might have, especially, you know, when we talk about potential purchases of vehicles and leases and, you know, what kind of, you know, fleets of vehicles do we have now? How much life do they have in them? And, you know, which department heads do actually need a vehicle and what are they actually doing with the car? So when we're talking about trying to find cost savings, that's what the city council is doing, is trying to find ways to save on that cost. Without affecting services.
Do you have the ability to get that deep into it in terms of making the final determinations? Because just to explain for the people how it works. So you're getting all these itemized lists, but you can't say we're not going to fund this department by X amount of money because we don't think you need this. You can say that, but like you formally can't strike that from what it is that they're trying to buy.
So technically on cut night, we could list, you know, for example, just because I was talking about, not that we would do something like this, you know, we decide we don't want this department to have cell phones. What, you know, we could put on the cut list that the reason for this cut, we could specify that the reason for this cut is because we don't believe you should have cell phones or whatever the case may be. We can specify the reasoning for our cut just so that way the administration knows that the reason for this cut to this department is specified for this. I, you know, I think about this in regards to, the DFFM, Department of Facilities and Fleet Management budget, where last year, we hadn't come to an agreement yet for the support agreement for the Zeitarian Theater. So some of my colleagues thought it was wise to subtract the amount that was earmarked for the Zeitarian Theater, and they listed that as the specific earmark. And at that time, the administration was like, oh, well, the council said we don't want to give any money for the Zeitarian Theater, so we will take it out for the Zeitarian Theater. I say that because they don't necessarily have to listen to us to answer your question. Just because we're saying we're taking this money out specifically because we don't have a support agreement with the Zeitarian Theater, so we'll take out the, you know, $295, or at the time it was $295, now it was $490, you know, whatever the amount is, we're subtracting it for this specific reason, and then if, you know, whenever we decide what the amount is, we can put it back. That's, you know, the reason they'll say, oh, yep, the council said we had to take it out, we'll take it out. We've done that in other departments all the time. We'll specify, as you're asking, why we're subtracting. We don't want you to pay for this contract. We don't want you to do this. But the administration doesn't have to listen to us. All that they legally, they can say, okay, well, you've given us enough money within this particular account to spend. And if they want to make adjustments however they see fit to pay for whatever they want within the confines of that department for what that money is there for, For example, personnel services for paying salaries. If they want to move positions around within that, if someone leaves and then someone else comes in, like the money's there for those positions. It doesn't necessarily mean it's only for the positions that are there currently, if that makes sense.
It does. So I was going to say, then how often do you think that happens where you approve a final amount and they just kind of move things around and say, well, we got the money and now we're just going to spend that money how we want to spend it, despite what we told the council we're going to spend
it on. So it happens all the time. And so that's the reason why I mentioned the Zyterian Theater specifically is because then what happened last year was, obviously I had voted initially against cutting the amount for the Zyterian Theater because I believe that we needed that money for the support agreement. Obviously, once the time came around to fund the Zyterian Theater and we approved the support agreement, we were looking at DFFM's budget and we were looking at how much was in that particular account where the support agreement would be funded. And I believed, and a number of my colleagues saw, they had enough money to fund the Zyterian support agreement without us adding that money back. But again, the administration was using the argument, you guys cut out that amount specifically because you said you don't want to fund the Zyterian. Now we're telling you, you need to put the money back. But we're looking at the returns and we're saying, well, you budgeted other items that didn't end up costing as much and you have the money there to fund this. So that's why I mentioned that specifically, because there are situations where, okay, well, actually, yes, technically we did cut that much specifically for the Zyterian, but then as time went on, we realized you actually have enough money to spend it anyway. And so we approved the support agreement. There's enough money there to spend it. So then spend it now that we have allocated those funds there. Those funds have been allocated in the Department of Facilities and Fleet Management to fund the support agreement. You have the money to do it, so you can do it.
So that's, it really is kind of a shell game to some degree on both sides, because you know that you're going to cut for certain things and you know that that money is going to get shifted around. And, you know, if there's something that they really want to do, they're still going to do it anyway. But your bottom line is you're just trying to keep that total number of the budget down to try to save taxpayers as much as you can.
Yeah. And I think we've discussed this last time or 2 weeks ago, I guess, because we took the Memorial Day off, but we're not allowed to transfer money around. All we can do is cut. So a lot of times is, as we've discussed before, because we're not allowed to transfer from, one department to another, only the administration can do that. They can send it down to us for approval. We might cut further from another department with the thought process of, well, the administration will fill it from another department that has a surplus. And that happens all the time. And so obviously, yes, the mayor doesn't like that. He, is frustrated by that. And he often points that out, that that's not a way to operate. But unfortunately, it's the strategic way that we sometimes have to operate because we're not a city council like Boston. And I mentioned Boston in particular because they're able to put in motions to increase certain funds and move money. Or even like, when I think of the state house, where oftentimes you'll hear like, oh, the house's budget is different from the Senate's budget and the governor's budget. And so people are like, what do you mean? And it sounds confusing if you're from New Bedford and you're like only used to the mayor's budget comes down and the council can only cut from it. So I think in the past, the mayor is used to a divided council. And I know oftentimes that's what some people like to categorize us as, is that we're so divided and it's so chaotic. But honestly, we're really not that divided and we're not that chaotic. And I think that's why they're trying to categorize us as that, because they're hoping to weaken us in that sense, because then during budget time, if we are as divided and chaotic as we are, then we wouldn't get the cuts. We won't get to that 6 votes that we need to make sure we're fine-tuning this budget down to just the bare essentials. So those out there in the city who are struggling right now to pay their water bills, to pay their taxes, can get by.
And this is a process that's going to continue on for the next couple of weeks of going through this with each department.
Yes. And then I think even the biggest night, the school department's coming up, I believe on June 5th, if I remember correctly. And that's always a tough discussion that, last year, that was one of the biggest nights that I had one of the hardest critiques for, I think, because that's where I get a lot of calls for. And that was one of my more impassioned moments with Superintendent O'Leary. mainly because I hear from a lot of teachers that are concerned about classroom sizes and resources that, you know, we're wondering. We have a lot of discussions around net school spending. We have a lot of discussions around resources that are going to, whether they're going to the classroom or to the Paul Roderick Administration Building. And one of the conversations I did get to have with Superintendent O'Leary and Assistant Superintendent Darcy Unks was about downsizing, essentially, in the amount of money that we're seeing, or the amount of concentration that we're seeing at the Paul Roderick Administration Building. And, you know, as they try to explain to me, is that although it might look like there's a lot of money at the Central Administration Building, a lot of that money is focused on helping our schools at large. So I'm hoping that this year in their presentation, they'll be able to showcase to us and to the public how that money is being leveraged for our students, because it's very challenging for us to keep going back to the taxpayers to say, yes, the state is telling us we have to increase this in the net school spending, and every time we see the pie chart keep growing for our education, and I will always continue to be a huge advocate for our education system. I believe that we need to have an educated population, and we don't want to see our public school system flounder. But at the same time, too, I see our teachers suffering. I see classroom sizes growing. I see supplies not being there. So if our funds are growing and we're, you know, as I often say, we write the checks, the city council cash, you know, signs the checkbook that the taxpayers pay. Why are we not seeing that return on our investment, essentially? So that discussion, I imagine, will be very lengthy, which is why I usually have the school department on their own. And that will, I'm sure, I hope that a lot of people will tune in to see that, because I think our school department is very essential to the future of our city.
All right, we've got to take a break here. When we come back, we can take your calls, 508-996-0500. We'll be back in a few moments. All right, we are going to go into the news with Mike Roberts. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk more with Council President Burgo and take your calls, 508-996-0500. You can also send in any app chat messages, but we'll talk about some other thing. We'll talk about what happened in the ordinance committee meeting. We'll talk about the rats and whatever else you would like to discuss with the council president. But right now, let's turn things over to Mike Roberts in the newsroom.
Many injured after an attack at a mall in Colorado, a small plane crash near Long Island, and it's hurricane season once again.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
At least six people hurt, including one critically, after what the FBI says was an act of terrorist against people marching for Israelis held by Hamas in Boulder, Colorado. The victims are in age from 67 to 88. The suspect, using a makeshift flamethrower and shouting pro-Palestine phrases. The suspect is in custody, 45-year-old Mohammed Solomon. The Boulder County Police Department said that they are investigating reports of a second suspect but have not found anything to suggest that those reports are true. Solomon was injured during the attack and was taken to a hospital. A miraculous rescue after a small plane crashes and sinks off of Connecticut yesterday morning in the Long Island Sound.
The Piper PA-32 went down near Thimble Islands about 10 minutes after taking off from Bridgeport. Leading up to the crash, the pilot issued a desperate call for help and was told to make an emergency landing at Tweed New Haven Airport. But the plane couldn't make it. As for the two people on board, they were pulled from the plane and the water with just minor injuries to their hands and faces. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
Yesterday marked the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season. There are normally 14 named storms during the six-month period that begins June 1st, including three major hurricanes. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says it expects between 13 and 19 named storms this year, and that up to 10 of them could be hurricanes. It expects at least three of them to be major hurricanes, with winds topping 110 miles per hour, The first named storm of the season will be Hurricane Andrea. The founder and former CEO of New Hampshire's biggest network of addiction centers arrested Friday. Federal prosecutors say he arranged a conspiracy to stalk and harass local journalists in retaliation for unfavorable reporting. The Justice Department announced the charges against Eric Spofford, who founded the for-profit drug and alcohol treatment company Granite Recovery Centers. Prosecutors say Spofford, who lives in Salem, New Hampshire, and in Miami, was indicted on one count of conspiracy to commit stalking through interstate travel and using a facility of interstate commerce. Spofford also indicted on two counts of stalking through interstate travel. Democrats say President Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill will kill Americans. That's what Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy said on CNN's State of the Nation.
When you lose your health care, you are much more at risk of early death.
Murphy says he fears that rural communities will suffer the most if the bill is signed into law. Democrats say the White House is trying to cut Medicaid and other social safety nets. Disney's Lilo and Stitch, in its second week, brought in a wave of $63 million. Lisa Taylor has the rest of your top five films over the weekend.
Paramount's Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, also in its second week on screens, drew in over $27 million over the weekend. Opening weekend for Sony Pictures' Karate Kid Legends picked up $21 million for the franchise film. Warner Brothers' Final Destination Bloodlines in its third week scared up just over $10 million. A24's newly released Bring Her Back brought the studio back a little over $7 million in its theater debut.
WBSM Sports.
The Red Sox beat the Braves yesterday 3-1. Angels are coming to Fenway tonight at 7:10.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
We're expecting mostly sunny skies throughout the day today with temperatures that should warm, well, a little bit warmer than we've seen over the weekend. Look for a high of 70. Overnight tonight, partly cloudy to mainly clear. Your low close to 50 degrees. And for Tuesday, wall-to-wall sunshine with an even warmer high well into the 70s. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Mike Roberts. WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get breaking news alerts and all of our content on the WBSM app. This WBSM news update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
We are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo, and we can take your calls at 508-996-0500. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You are on with the Council President.
Hey, good morning. Gentlemen and Shane, what I'd like to hear from you is a denunciation of the violence that happened over the weekend out in Colorado. As we know, you know, free speech is free speech. But instigatory free speech is not, you know, it's a dangerous thing. And that's where the First Amendment technically ends as far as law enforcement is concerned. Do you see a danger in what you were involved in here is as far as the Free Palestine rally? Do you see any correlation between your free speech that might lead to acts of violence such as we saw? And I'll hang up. I'll let you answer. Have a good day.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what he's referring to, what I was involved in here. But to answer his question, or I denounce all violence. I don't believe violence is the answer. So, yeah, I believe that no matter what side you're on any argument, whether you're for or against something, you instantly lose, I think, credibility when you turn to violence. Although, you know, I there are, you know, situations, I guess, where I can understand people's frustration, but I would often say to those individuals that there are other ways to seek resolution than to pick up a, you know, as they say, the pen is mightier than the sword and all those other kind of quotes you can come up with. But yes, of course, I never believe that violence will lead to resolution.
Yeah, I don't think that was the gotcha that he thought that it was.
Yeah.
Basically saying, well, do you support somebody's mental illness and the fact that they then utilized a movement to justify that mental illness? Because that's what it is when somebody acts out like this.
Yeah. You know? And it's I think a part of the same reason why a lot of people are seeking ceasefires and the end to war, and everyone's looking to seek peace. But yeah, I guess I think we're all in agreement that we want to see the end of violence everywhere.
And we need to end the idea that people who are in support of Palestinian people are not, you know, in support of violence. They're not in support of anti-Semitism. It's okay. You can be two different things at once. You can be in support of, you know, the Jewish people and the Palestinian people. Because many people are. I've never heard anybody come out and say free Palestine and death to Israel. They've just said free Palestine. Mm-hmm. So, except for obviously these extreme people who take it to a different level. Mm-hmm. Bringing it back on a local focus, the Ordinance Committee meeting, there was a lot of news that came out of that.
Yeah. Our chairman, Ryan Pereira, I think, held a great meeting. A lot of information that came out of there. Also, our legislative counsel, David Garatowski, was able to catch, it looks like, an oversight. We're still looking into what happened with the chart, obviously, when it came to some zoning situations. I know we're still working with our planning department. Jennifer Carlani is very responsive, and I think she does a great job as our director of planning. So I know that Chairman, Councilor, Ward 6 Councilor Ryan Pereira will be working with her in preparation for his next meeting. I know I was a bit disappointed, obviously, for that one aspect of that motion. And then obviously, if you watch the meeting, there was another aspect where there were some changes that we're looking to make. I know there was around the ADUs again and other zonings, and it didn't properly go before the planning board where we need their recommendation. So that step will happen, and then it will come before us again. It obviously was a bit disappointing because for our process, it's an open public hearing, and we advertise it. Money was spent. People have to come. So unfortunately, we had to close that public hearing. We'll have to re-advertise that again. Mistakes happen, but hopefully won't happen again. The other portion of that meeting that I was disappointed, obviously, that I had to miss was the discussion around the recall. I'm not sure why it was tabled again. Well, I know why it was tabled again. You know, one of my colleagues wants to make yet another amendment to it. I felt as though we rehashed it as much as we, you know, could and had made significant amendments to it already to make it as well as of a recall petition as it could be. So I'm hoping that our chairman, Ryan Pereira, will bring that back up sooner than later, and we'll have a quick resolution to that as well. But overall, you know, as I mentioned, not it was a short ordinance committee meeting, but I feel at the same time, too, a lot occurred within that short time frame. So it was very interesting to see some of the more impassioned counselors that were vehemently opposed to this recall suddenly turn it all around, and then also at the same time were very silent. It was very odd to me as well that the counselors that were fighting so hard to get this recall back into committee to discuss it and put a time frame on it that we want this back into committee within 30 days had nothing to say during that meeting, which was very odd to me. But I guess that's government. So in any case, I'm sure it will be back before us again. I still fully support having a recall on the books. I believe that we should have a recall in place. I always have. I know it's been reported here that I was against it, but never have. You can check the voting record. I know that's difficult for some people, but
so in a recall for which positions?
For all elected positions. So, and I think that's a part of the amendment that someone wants to put forward, which I won't support. I think that it's inappropriate to, you know, take away any specific position. I understand the concern of our, you know, city council position being 2 years, and that's why my one of the amendments that was already included in there talked about the time frames on either end, because as we discussed in great extent about the cost of these recalls, and we don't want to be in a situation as we talked about with Fall River where they have these recalls and they, you know, don't work out or what have you. And I think even if I remember correctly, just in one ward, not citywide, but just one ward, it would cost about $10,000 to hold one of these elections, or one recall election. And again, not to say that if this goes into place, you're going to have a bunch of recalls happening. I might disagree with a number of my colleagues on a number of issues, but I don't believe they're doing anything that warrants a recall. You know, often what we hear from a number of people in the public is the recalls happen in the ballot box during, well, they literally happen in the ballot, but I, what I mean by that is during, right now, we're up for re-election.
Right, this is
in November.
When you're accountable.
And, you know, one of the things happened, you know, I've already turned in my signatures for my nomination papers to get back on the ballot for re-election. And anytime I go collect signatures from people, the first thing out of people's mouth is, oh, you're already up for re-election? So that's why I think this amendment is probably being proposed, is because my colleagues who are two-year term situation feel as though once we get elected, we're already essentially running to get reelected. But in any case, it just, to me, it looks inappropriate to say we can put a recall in for everyone else but the position we hold. It's just not appropriate. And for me to further stall something that's already been stalled is just ridiculous. But I'm looking forward to further discussion on the matter, and I'm just glad that we're finally bringing it back up again.
And the threshold to be able to have a recall is pretty high, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's gonna be an easy thing for people to go out and get the signatures that they're gonna need to move this forward.
Yeah, and there's multiple layers. You have to have the initial amount of signatures you need just to get the I forget the term, the warrant of, I don't know if it's called a warrant, but just to say, hey, we want to recall this person. You bring those number of signatures, and then once they're certified, then they give you the certified collection to say, okay, fine, you've met the threshold to now go to the next step. And then you have to get an additional amount of signatures to say, okay, now this can go to a ballot. So that's why I think, again, it's not and we've baked in other safety nets to make sure we don't end up like Fall River, where, for example, we'll just say it, Jaisal Correa was recalled I don't know how many times, and then he was allowed to run again. Mm-hmm. That's where we baked in where if you're recalled, you can't then run in the same election where then you've been, you know, so because that's what ended up happening with Jaisal Correa.
It was recalled, but he won.
Yeah, because of how diluted the vote was, and then he won by a plurality and whatever the case may be. So we've learned from other municipalities, a lot of work went into putting this together. So that, to me, is why I'm a bit frustrated by this whole process, because only a small number of us, again, I'll repeat it for those who have ignored, who supported this on the council. It was myself, Ryan Pereira, Sean Oliver, and Leo Choquette. Just the four of us have supported this since the beginning. And the rest of my colleagues have strongly opposed this. And so it's just laughable to me that people like Ian Abreu, you know, came along and decided, oh, yes, no, I want to revisit this. And then obviously Leo Choquette, who's supported all along, him and, you know, Ian have teamed up to say, yes, let's revisit this. And it's just kind of silly to me now that they think that we'll have the support for it. To remind some people at home that don't understand how a home rule petition works. You need 8 votes of the council, a supermajority, as well as the mayor's support to get something passed. So even if we have 6 votes of the council, this isn't going anywhere. So I'm not sure where the future of this recall petition will lie. I'm not sure if other colleagues will have some kind of turnaround or flip-flop like Ian has. We'll see how that goes, but I guess we'll find out.
All right. Well, we got to take a break. 508-996-0500. We'll be back in a few moments with Council President Burgo. All right. We're going to be wrapping things up with Council President Burgo and then giving way to South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. His guest today at 9 a.m. is going to be Senate Ways and Means Chairman Mike Rodericks. So you're going to want to tune in for that for sure. And in the final few moments that we have here, I just want to ask you, are you hearing from people about this rat problem, this infestation now that's occurred over the last week or so?
Yeah. So, before it became obviously a huge story on New Bedford Guide and all these other Facebook groups that were posting, obviously, the actual images and videos of the rats running in the street. We received a number of phone calls, myself, Councillor Oliver, and then even Councillor Baptiste, the Ward 4 councillor, took a drive up to Chaminade Ave, and even himself saw it and called me. I was in contact with Lindsay Carter Montero. She had informed me that they were already aware of the situation. The city had been working on solutions to try to mitigate the situation. Obviously, it had continued to manifest, and it was getting, obviously, it's continued to get out of hand. And I believe Harvey is the Harvey Trash Company is trying to clean up.
But it's become a bigger problem than just in that immediate area.
Yeah, and it's been spreading. And I think that's why now the city obviously has released their action plan to showcase that the work that they have been doing already behind the scenes. I think a lot of times, and this is when people have called, I've explained to them, like, yes, we're aware of the situation. We've been working on this. And, even when I was speaking with Council Oliver about it ahead of time, and he obviously had released his letter publicly, we had been working on this already behind the scenes. A lot of the times, it's not that we're trying to hide anything from people. A lot of times, it's because we're trying not to cause public panic. Mm-hmm. But then, obviously, this one got out of control where it wasn't able to be contained. And then it expanded beyond Chaminade Ave. It expanded beyond the airport and other areas. But at this point now, based on the fumigation and other traps that have been placed, there have been now reports of people finding dead rats, which is just as troubling, obviously, to find a dead rat as it is to find a live rat running around. So I think over time, obviously, it's still a concern. People are still posting, even this morning as I, was getting ready.
They're still all out there this morning, and yesterday morning I was getting videos.
Yeah, I was just going to say, people are still posting now this morning, what is the city doing? I thought this was taken care of. It's not something that will be resolved overnight. It is going to take some time. Obviously, it's easier said than done to tell people, please bear with us as we work on this. But I just say to the people, continue to be vigilant, continue to call the health department. If you see other rats, don't feel like, oh, I just called, keep calling, keep reporting any sightings that you see. The health department is on it. They're continuing to work with Harvey. They're continuing to work with local establishments that are in the area to help clean this up and make sure that it doesn't happen again and that it doesn't continue to spread.
And I'm interested in finding out how it happened to begin with. That'll be part of it as well. All right, we got to take our final break, and we'll come back and wrap things up with the council president. Stay tuned. All right, we're going to wrap things up with Council President Burgo. He wants to tell us about all the meetings that are coming up this week.
Yes, so we have 3 neighborhood groups this week. So tonight, actually, at 6:30 p.m., we have the North End Neighborhood Association, which is held at the Global Learning Charter Public School, which is at 190 Ashley Boulevard. That's run by Scott Pemberton, and our council liaison is Ward 2 Councilor Maria Giesta. And then tomorrow, Tuesday, June 3rd, 3rd at 6 p.m. We have the Cove Street Neighborhood Association, which is run by Celine Sariva. And our counselor, Ward 6 Counselor Ryan Pereira, is our council liaison. That's held at 3 Rodney French Boulevard. And then lastly, on Wednesday, June 4th, we have the Ward 5 Neighborhood Meeting, which is at the Buttonwood Park Warming House. And that's run by Counselor at Large Naomi Carney and Ward 5 Counselor Joe Lopes. So those are our three meetings. Again, tonight, 6:30 p.m., North End Neighborhood Group. Tomorrow, 6 p.m., the Cove Street Neighborhood Group. And then Wednesday, 7 p.m., the Ward 5 Neighborhood Meeting.
So get out there and get involved. And really, like we always say, you know, if you want to see something happen, that's the place to start.
Yeah, as I mentioned, that we always have a counselor there to be able to talk with constituents, and we want to hear from you. Often, you know, anytime there's something happening in your neighborhood, nothing's ever too small to tell us about trash pickups, lights, you know, potholes, whatever's going on. And obviously, right now during budget times, taxes are too high, water bills too high. Those things are common things that we often hear. But any concerns you have going on, those are the best places to go to talk to us.
Also, there's no more pothole issues. They're filling the potholes now with dead rats. So just when you drive over, it might squish a little bit, but that's all right. It's at least they're filled. I know, I made that joke last week, and somebody was like, I was eating breakfast when you said that. Yeah. I was like, hey, well, listen, dead rat talk is going to have to happen over the course of the next couple of weeks. But we'll be back with you next week, and you'll be able to update us on all the things that are moving forward. And I know this time of year, especially with all the budget meetings, you know, the last thing you want to do is wake up extra early to come in, so we appreciate it.
Anytime. I appreciate the opportunity, as always.
All right. Stay tuned for South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Again, his guest for the first hour is going to be Senate Ways and Means Chairman Mike Rodericks. He'll be taking your phone calls, 508-996-0500.